This is Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski. Here now, Tony Brewski.
The case against Brian Koberger, obviously, he's in jail for the rest of his life. But that doesn't mean there's not new pieces of this puzzle that we are finding and unwrapping and putting into the puzzle going, oh, well, this might make a little bit more sense. We're going to talk about some of the images from that apartment that have been released, the hundreds and hundreds of images from Brian Koberger's apartment. His office, and there's some interesting findings in there, including the medication that he was on. Yes, it was blocked off, but we have figured out what it was because there was a medical code that was not blocked off. And we're going to talk with Jennifer Coffendaff, a retired FBI special agent, about that today. But Jennifer, let's start with this. The newly released images from the apartment, it really gives us kind of a rare, intimate look at the environment that he inhabited in the aftermath of the murders. And I kind of think of this almost like not even as an apartment. It is like a habitat because he's kind of like a lizard. And it's just like, oh, well, there's his feeding bowl over there. And there's his little water thing. There's disturbing clarity in what was left behind, from the criminology text to the birthday cards sent after the killings, cleaning supplies, blood stains, chilling handprints. It's not all just clutter. It's a story that is... That's being told. Let's look at some of this. Investigators found the graded essays and academic files, some critical of his writing and what he was putting out there to his professors. What did you glean off of? Let's start with that. Some of the papers, some of the academic pieces that were found in his apartment.
Well, I have to say and I wasn't a PhD student in criminology, but I was a criminology major. And when you look at the different papers that are written, quite frankly, I thought everything seemed sort of routine in terms of what you study in mm-hmm. criminal justice. So it didn't jump off the page like I think it might be to some people because mm-hmm. they haven't studied it. So it was nothing that I found too profound, if you will. I thought it was interesting, though, that he talks about the lack of training with police officers. So mm-hmm. he knew that. We all know that. Most of us know that. They go through a very short training period, and that's all the training they ever get for the rest of their career, mm-hmm. other than they don't even get training in shooting. They go mm-hmm. out and they qualify with their 50 or 60 rounds once a year, and that's it. So their training is literally OJT, mm-hmm. and that's why there's, you know, mistakes made. And he well knew that. I did think that was interesting, almost like he was sort of counting on it.
There's birthday cards there as well, dated November 21st of 2022, just days after the actual murders, which... I don't know, that's an interesting find. And the thought I'm just having there is... it was so close to his birthday that these crimes took place, and he'd been stalking for quite some time. Do you think in some way, shape, or form, he chose this date to be his own little pre-birthday present?
I do. I don't think it's a stretch to say anything like that. Think of all the times that you said, you know what? I'm going to take this trip. It's a week in advance of your birthday. I'm going to take it. I'm going to buy this something for myself because you know what? My birthday, it's coming up. It's around the corner. Mm-hmm. And it makes so much sense to me when you see the thumbs up selfie combined with the timing. You know, it just makes all the sense in the world that this was some sort of gift to himself in part. I know that sounds horrible. Yeah. That's what I really believe.
No, I mean, it does. Of course, it sounds horrible, but... yeah, when you put that together, it's another ode to himself, mm-hmm. you know, for someone that really just thinks the world of himself. Well, mom seemed to as well. We saw that that birthday card in there with who was it? It was Teddy Roosevelt, I believe, riding a dinosaur. And mom made some interesting notes on the card. I don't have it directly in front of me at this second, but it was alluding to his personality. One part being kind of the more formal academic, the Teddy Roosevelt, the other being this dinosaur that's out of control. That's just knocking things down and has no self-control, nothing. It's just out there, this rage in the universe. It's interesting that Mom honed in on that when she was walking through Walgreens picking out the card, and how accurate that really does seem to be of his personality. I'm not going to take the credit for that observation. Robin Drake had that this morning with us. I'm curious to get your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I thought it was very interesting. I posted that card right away. I also thought it was interesting, the date of his birthday coinciding. It's just interesting with the, 1122, when he decided mm-hmm. to do the murders with 1122 King Road. Just mm-hmm. kind of one of those things. Do I think he did it because of that? You know, did he choose that address because of that? No, but it's just kind of one of those weird things. But definitely noticed that with the card. It blared off the page, in my opinion, that he had a grandiose view of himself, and it wasn't missed by his mother.
God, the numerology is getting weird on this, isn't it?
It is, and that's all it is. But I tell you, it's just over and over again. You know, I keep finding these little nuggets. I mean,
not in no way saying it's like supernatural or ghostly. It's more like, did he plan it this way? Did he seek out these numbers to do things in certain ways? Oh, that's, yeah. But again, he's a copycat of a lot of things. So it could just be a couple places where these numbers line up. And it's like, he thinks this is some, you know, in-depth look at me and how great my thinking is. The apartment appeared very Spartan, bare walls, stripped shelves, minimalist storage. In your experience, I mean, does that minimalism, is that an attempt to, you know, erase personal emotion, to show he doesn't have any emotion, you know, or to create any sort of psychological distance from anything, including a setting that one would call home?
Well, you ready for this, Tony? Because
yeah.
I might throw a wrench in that philosophy.
All right.
I really believe that I want to see his apartment before the murders.
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved to have seen that. I bet you it looked more like his icebox and his pantry.
Mm-hmm.
This is my point. He, just like they said, he dismantled that car and put it back together to make sure he wiped it clean. I think he did that with his apartment. He didn't want any possibility of any blood, any pet hairs, anything being found at a later time. I think he cleaned, he scrubbed. I think he made that apartment that sterile. I don't think it was that sterile before the murders.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong. I just don't think it was that sterile. I think that's why we see no shower curtain and all the other sterileness of that place. I think he got rid of anything.
You make a good point. I mean, he did it with the car. We know that, basically described as disassembled. Because, I mean, it almost feels like when I look at that apartment, I said earlier on the show today, I said it looks like he's staying at like the Residence Inn or something, where you're just there for a few nights, you're in town, and then you're out. You put a few things in the closet, you know, whatever, and then you're in and out. But this is where he's living for long, long periods of time, but to not have anything there, it looks like he's getting it ready to sell or to leave or to move out. But that does make a lot of sense. His car was almost, I mean, you know, disassemble your car, but I guess you clean it up before you sell it. It kind of had that same sort of vibe to it. I that's a very good observation. I'd agree with that. Among the recovered items, a lot of cleaning supplies, which points to that, and a box of bear spray. Odd combinations for the context. I mean, how do these elements become more than just supplies in interpreting suspect behavior? Or at this point, is it just kind of random things that we're finding in this house? He got rid of anything that would have been more questionable.
There is no way that, in my opinion, that bear spray is random or just something he had around. This goes back to my belief that, and I've said this from day one, that he hid those garments, he hid that knife, because for him to return to them, just like Bundy would return to dead bodies and get off, I think he was going to return to those items, indicia of the crime, his reminders, that precious knife, and get off. And I think it's hidden well within a wooded area somewhere. And I think that bear spray was to protect himself when he went into that environment.
So wouldn't it have been used against people? It was to protect him to get back to his hidey hole, basically.
That's what I think.
That makes sense. Robin also has the same sort of theory. He brought it up on the show, I think, initially before a lot of folks did. Even talking about some specific locations, if you look back, you know, where his car would be, some of those parks, he's been wondering if maybe that hidey hole resides in one of those areas. What are your thoughts on where maybe this hidey hole might be?
Well, I think the initial hidey hole was close to that Moscow area in that circuitous way that he took and the time that was spent after the murders and before he arrived back at the apartment. So I think that was an initial hidey hole. I think there was a secondary hidey hole that occurred en route from Moscow to Pennsylvania. Again, a very circuitous route, a route no one would take, especially on a long trip, unless they just wanted to see, you know, the greatest, biggest ball of twine somewhere if they were on this sort of mission.
Who doesn't?
Exactly. There's no reason for him to take that route. He had that shovel, which again, a lot of people said, well, you know, the snow shovel, you know, I have had this conversation. I don't think that was a snow shovel. There was dirt in it. We don't know what the shovel was. That is one of the pieces I am dying to see. But, you know, the FBI thought it was important enough that they took the dirt and compared it to all these other dirts from all these other places that were en route in that weird route he took to get back home. So, yes, I mean, this is telling me as an FBI agent, this is what I would have done if I had a shovel. Why did he have that shovel with him?
Why? Exactly. I think we should all get together some weekend with metal detectors and go visit these parks and see what we can find.
He's so interesting. I mean, that K-bar knife, for people who don't know, and I really need to take a picture with it. It's huge.
Yeah.
Tony, it's huge. Yeah. I bet you it's about this big, like from the top of my fingers to here. You know, this isn't the little.
Not a little like knife that you would think, you know, oh, let's put this here. This is a killing machine. And it has some space in whatever box it's sitting in under the ground.
Gosh. Yeah.
I want to talk about a new detail that we have learned about Brian Koberger, and this is exclusive and breaking here that we've discovered on the program. Actually, Stacey Cole earlier on today's program, Hidden Killers Live, brought this up. We can now confirm Brian Koberger, well, at least according to the prescription that has his name on it in his house, was taking thyroxine, a thyroid medication. We're not here to dissect it medically. We're not here to say anything negative about it. Many people take this and they need it, and it's great for people have thyroid problems. This, in many cases, helps with that. What matters is how it plays into the bigger picture of who he was. This drug, if not balanced, can leave someone, according to the research that we've done on it, either foggy, drained, or wired. I guess maybe I should read it like you do in the commercials. Wired, restless, and sleepless. may cause this, may cause that, may cause you to go and murder people. It doesn't have that in there. But if you layer this, the weird, the restless, the sleepiness, and there are other side effects, this is going to be a deeper dive we have to go into. But you layer this on top of the other self-diagnosed conditions, autism spectrum, OCD, ADHD, ARFID. And suddenly you've got a new window onto a man who may have been living with a very volatile internal state. I want to unpack not the chemistry, but the impact, how investigators, corrections, and the public should interpret a detail like this, knowing what he was on. And understanding, if anyone knows, thyroid can mess with you in immense ways, including personality-wise. What's your take on this now that we know what he was taking?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, as an investigator, one of the main areas I always loved going and looking in was the medicine chest and then also the nightstand. What were they really taking? What were they really using? A lot of people keep old medication, but you want to find out what they're using. And that was always a key part of any investigation, in my opinion. Why? Because it could be used by the defense. It could also be used to show medical conditions. I've got to tell you, Tony, to me, what wasn't there stood out more than what was there, although I find this medication quite interesting. But what wasn't there were all the medications you would expect somebody that had severe OCD, that had, you know, other, all those other lists that came out of nowhere that were listed out in court. I would want to see those medications. But no, what we have is this thyroid medication, which I did find very interesting because, you know, the thyroid can also affect, I believe, things like appetite and things along that line. A lot of people have asked, why at times does he look so gaunt? Why at other times did he look a little bit more muscular and things? And I believe that affects that. But it's all medications have after effects. They have counter effects, some very mild, some that no one gets. But was he affected by that medication? I tell you, if I would have been the defense, I would have been pouncing on that if it would have gone to trial.
I am wondering, you know, all we know is that this was in his house, and we have the prescription sheet. We've found the code on the prescription sheet, and that's what led us to determine what the medication is and what that prescription, in fact, was for. When you have that piece of information now, it makes me wonder, okay, who prescribed this? How was this prescribed? We know he had all these other diagnoses. Was this the catch-all? Was this the one that a general practitioner said, you know what, take this. Maybe it's just a thyroid problem that he has these things, but maybe this thyroid problem can be addressed and some of these other things will be tampered down and helped with this medication. Because in some cases, right, this can actually help with some of that. Obviously, it's different. Medications interact differently with every single human being and their own biology. So what this may help someone over here may not help this person over here. So we know this kind of drug, it can push someone towards either extreme fatigue or extreme restlessness. And you have that and you mix it with the other things, you know, it can really mess with a personality more than that personality already has. I mean, how might that have shown up in his routines and behavior patterns that investigators observed?
Well, you know, the medical piece of this was always such a drive, I think, on both sides in a way, but particularly the defense. I mean, look, the Twinkie defense. Does everybody remember that? When literally Twinkies, you know, supposedly led to a murder and that was used as a defense. All the sugar, in other words, they called it the Twinkie defense, but sugar, lots and lots of sugar.
Yeah.
My point is that I think from a defense standpoint, they were always going to use these medical issues. And remember, there was a lot of contention between the prosecution and the defense about all these medical records, and then medical records the prosecution wasn't supposed to get that they sent back, and they apologized. It wasn't their fault. They were sent them. Anyway, long story short, I think all of us recognized that the defense was going to try to use medical issues. But really, Tony, a thyroid medication that likely millions of people are on. I haven't crunched the numbers yet, but I did look up that medication and I didn't see it as anything blaring.
No.
Like some medications you look up, like Accutane, you know.
No.
You even see the word Accutane. Oh my God, they might go and commit a murder, right?
Yeah, it's not that. It's not some of the other like insomnia drugs where we've heard of people going and doing crazy things on them and having zero recollection. This is a very standard, very commonly prescribed drug. So I don't want anybody to think you take this, you're going to go slaughter a bunch of kids. That's not at all. But it's just, it's a unique one to mix with what we know about him and his current conditions. Not that it couldn't have been very helpful and balancing. I'd almost be curious what he'd be like if he wasn't taking it. Or was he not taking it, I guess, could be another part of the question as well.
Yeah, and the dates. How long was he on it? Was this newly prescribed? Had he been on it for years? all of those details are so important. But what a find. I mean, to me, it's so interesting whenever you find a nugget like that, because we were all wondering if he really was diagnosed with all these horrible conditions to the degree that they somehow played a part in committing a mass murder. Why wasn't he medicated? Early on in his life, we see what he was talking about. I mean, we see there was somebody with a serious problem. And this is all you have in your apartment is a thyroid medication?
And that's what I wonder. I mean, why was he medicated? Why wasn't he medicated? What was he properly medicated? I think that's the big question. Was he properly medicated? Because he was diagnosed with all these things before this all happened. The parents knew, he knew there was stuff going on with him that he needed some help for. But depending on who you go to for that help is going to depend on what you're going to get for that. And some, especially if you're a general practitioner, they don't have the insight. They don't have the training as a psychiatrist would to know, hey, this is what you should be taking for this condition or that condition. And it's an astronomical number in our country, where general practitioners are prescribing medications for psychiatric conditions that they have no business prescribing them for, because people are not going to a psychiatrist. It's either not attainable, it's too expensive, they're not in their area, it's not covered by their insurance, so they go to their regular doctor, and their doctor is doing the best that they can, quote unquote, to try and help with those problems. And that's what I'm really wondering here in Koberger's case. Is this one of those stories where they're taking this or taking that? Well, my doctor said I should take it. And if he were to go to a psychiatrist or someone with more experience, they'd say, what? You shouldn't be medicated on that. I mean, in my own life, I've seen this with other people, even with myself. You go to one doctor, why are they giving you that? Like, that's not good for this or that. I mean, everyone seems to have a different expertise or direction, but I'm wondering, was he extremely mismedicated?
Well, and this is important too. That was the search of the apartment.
Yeah.
What was with him in Pennsylvania? Mm-hmm. In other words, he left that behind. Mm-hmm. Did he have two bottles of it? Was he even taking it?
Because this isn't one where it's like, I'm going to take it as needed. This is every day you take this. Otherwise, your thyroid can get way off. And it's not, I mean, depending, thyroids can do a lot of stuff. It can screw with you immensely. And I'm wondering if we've kind of come across something here where there's something, because we know there's something really off about this guy deep, deep down. And it's easy to go, he's evil, he's this, he's that. Does this go back to a thyroid problem that's been mismanaged forever, mixed with all these other mental health issues? And this is how you get this zombie-ish like creature that is Brian Koberger, that fixates on things in very unhealthy ways and doesn't seem to know how to interact with society. I'm really wondering how much of this man was made into a zombie, or were they trying to pull him out of that state with meds. I don't know which way it turns.
I'd be very interested to look and see. Hopefully those codes will be revealed. They might make sure to redact those now as they see all this.
Yeah, now that we've put this out there, yeah.
But I'd love to see what he had with him that he felt was important enough that he needed to take with him, and how, what those, medications were. And back to your point about basically being sort of chemically altered, right? When you take too much medication and all that, I think it's going to be interesting to see what he took with him. That's another thing I would like to know.
Yeah, what was in that go bag of his? What was he packing as he went along? What did he? I guess another question would be, what did he think he needed to take? You know, because that can be another big thing with any sort of medication that you're taking, and especially with someone like a Koberger, where there's clearly some mental health issues going on here. Folks don't always take their meds, and not that a thyroid med is anything like an SSRI or something that you'd be taking for mental health disorders. But sometimes people feel, I don't need that. I don't need that anymore. I'm okay. And you don't take it. And yeah, there's a lot of things that can go wrong with your brain for medications that aren't necessarily designed for that specifically. But lots of questions and still more answers to dig for as we keep unpacking Brian Koberger. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, as always, thank you so much. And of course, Break the Case, your podcast. Get it wherever you get podcasts. And be sure to check out her YouTube channel as well, Break the Case with Jennifer Coffin.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.